This podcast is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, safer, healthier people.
I'm Dan Rutz at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, and with me via the phone is Dr. Alan Parkinson, Deputy Director of CDC's Arctic Investigations Program in Anchorage, Alaska. Dr. Parkinson is an expert in Arctic health issues and also has had two articles in the January 2008 issue of Emerging Infectious Diseases, which was devoted to Arctic health and the International Polar Year. Alan, so many people may not realize that everyday life in the Arctic is all that different from life elsewhere, beyond climate, of course. But what is it that makes it unique and challenging from a health perspective?
We have about 4 million people which live in the Arctic, and almost half of those actually live in northern regions of the Russian Federation. And the populations of these regions made up of varying proportions of European and indigenous ancestry. And for example, everyone knows that in the Arctic, it's the homeland of the Eskimo. But the Eskimo comprise of various groups, including the Inuit of Greenland, northern Canada, and northern Alaska. And we have the Yupik of western Alaska and eastern coastal regions of the Russian Federation. And we have the Aleut, which live along the Aleutian chain. And in addition, we have in the north, in the interior and western coastal regions of northern Canada and Alaska, we have a number of North American Indian groups, which include the Athabascan, the Eyak, the Tlingit, Gwich'in, Métis, First Nations populations of Canada. In Alaska, though, we use the terminology we use for peoples of indigenous ancestry is Alaska Native. In remote regions of North American, Arctic, and Greenland, and the Russian Federation, many of these indigenous peoples live in very small, isolated communities. They're very dependent on subsistence, hunting, and fishing. They have very little economic infrastructure in their communities. And in these remote regions, public health and access to hospitals and clinics are often marginal. They're sometimes underfunded, they're of course understaffed, they have high staff turnover. And in some cases, hospitals, access to hospitals and clinics are actually is non-existent. In addition, because of the remoteness of these regions, there's also a lack of physical infrastructure like roads which would link villages to hospitals. There's inadequate water and sewage and disposal systems in many of these villages. It's really amazing today, in this day and age, that about one-third of Alaska Natives have no in-home water or sewage service. And this, of course, this really impacts human health in these regions in a big way.
Sounds like they deal with a fair amount of hardship. There must be some progress over time that we can cite.
Well, we've seen some improvements in the past decade. Since about 1950, life expectancy for Alaska Natives has actually increased by more than 20 years to about 69. And we've done a good job in decreasing the number of deaths due to infections. Infections caused about half of Alaska Native deaths in 1950, but by 1990 accounted for about only 1.2% of deaths. And this is really largely due to better living conditions, safe water, childhood vaccination programs in particular, has really made, and access to health care, of course, has really made a big difference. But we still see the Alaska Natives facing greater health challenges.
What are some examples of that?
Well, despite the improvements in health, up here in Alaska, the Alaska Natives really face shorter life expectancy, higher infant mortality rates, and higher rates of injury and suicide. And for native infants, the rates of pneumonia, meningitis, and respiratory infections are also higher. We have cases of botulism that occur. This is generally caused by people eating improperly prepared, traditionally prepared fermented subsistence foods such as fish or seal meat. Or infections with a parasite called trichinosis, where they get that from consuming uncooked bear or walrus meat. At the same time, many communities that for years have been isolated are now really just a plane ride away from major cities, and this sounds great, but it also opens up these residents to the introduction of new diseases like influenza, tuberculosis, drug-resistant organisms like methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And we hope by focusing on some of these health problems, we can improve life for Alaska Natives.
A lot of talk these days, Alan, about global warming. I imagine that would also affect or interest people in the Arctic region. How is it affecting them at this point?
Well, the changing climate is already having an effect. And one of the direct effects of climate change is, of course, an increase in ambient temperature in the Arctic. And this warming has reduced, in particular, reduced the amount or the extent of sea ice, which is very important for protecting coastal villages from erosion. And we also have ice-rich permafrost throughout most of Alaska and parts of the Arctic. And this permafrost actually supports entire communities. And so with the recent decades of warming, this has been accompanied by extensive loss of permafrost, thawing in many regions, and this causes riverbank erosion, ground subsidence, and damage to community buildings and infrastructure. And particularly concerning from a health perspective is the damage to water intake systems resulting in contamination of water supplies. And the thawing can also damage access roads, water storage tanks, waste water treatment facilities, and they can render water and waste water treatment systems inoperable. And this forces families and whole communities to move, which will mean they will have to adapt to new ways of life elsewhere, creating new social connections. We'll also probably see some unemployment, and relocation may lead to rapid and long-term cultural change and loss of traditional culture, which will create additional stress and mental health issues for the Alaska Native population. Subsistence hunting and fishing is very important to the communities up here, and present climate change already poses serious harm to this way of life in many communities. We have a reduction of snow cover, short river and sea ice season, thawing of permafrost, and this all obstructs travel and access to harvest, the harvesting of land mammals such as caribou, and making hunting more difficult and dangerous and less successful. And so, and in addition, climate change is having a big impact on populations of these animals, the marine and land animals, and waterfowl. They have to find different routes that changes their migration routes, and so this further reduces the ability of the people to obtain traditional food. And with the reduction in traditional food, it forces the people in the communities to increasingly depend on non-traditional, perhaps less healthy Western food, resulting in increased rates of the so-called modern diseases, which are associated with processed foods. And this includes, of course, diabetes, obesity, increases in cardiovascular disease, outbreaks of foodborne infectious diseases imported, associated with imported fresh and processed foods. Unintentional injury mostly relates to subsistence hunting and fishing, and this is already a major cause of morbidity and mortality in our population up here. And the reduction in the river and sea ice thickness in a warming Arctic, of course, will create increasingly unpredictable travel conditions, and this will probably increase the chance for injury and death by drowning. And, of course, we still don't really understand the full impact of global warming, and we'll have to, in the Arctic, and we'll have to monitor its effects very closely to see how this will impact the health of the Arctic people.
Doesn't look too good at this point, does it? In March 2007, last year, kicked off the fourth International Polar Year, a time to focus scientific evaluation of the Arctic and Antarctic regions. Dr. Parkinson, can you tell us why this International Polar Year is so important, and what are the goals of it?
Yes, Dan. What makes the International Polar Year so important, it is actually a one-year focus on science in the polar regions. And this is actually the fourth polar year. It occurs about every 50 years or so, and the last was 1957-58. And it's important because it truly is an international effort. It creates collaborations between scientists and institutions worldwide, and enables them to sort of band together to tackle the big scientific questions that resources from one country could not ordinarily achieve by itself. And the polar regions are very important parts of the Earth system. Among other things, the poles are essentially the Earth's air conditioning system. They absorb heat from other parts of the globe, and therefore they drive climate changes elsewhere on the planet. So in an era of climate change, it's very important that we understand what's happening in these regions. And broadly, the goals of the International Polar Year are to make significant advances in polar knowledge and understanding, and while leaving sort of a legacy of ongoing international collaborations and partnerships, to set up new or enhance observational systems, research facilities, infrastructure, and assets that can be used for years to come. But perhaps the most important goal will be to create interest in science and create a generation of new polar scientists and engineers to help rekindle the interest in polar science and exploration, not only among the scientists, but also people who live in the polar regions, school children, the general public, and policymakers worldwide. And the polar year does actually generate new polar scientists. I'm actually a graduate of the last polar year. I grew up in New Zealand. And in 1957, when I was only about 10 years of age, I followed Sir Edmund Hillary's transantarctic expedition as he led a group of scientists across Antarctic ice cap to determine the total size of Antarctica's ice mass. And this event must have made a very big impression on me, because I've now spent about 30 years doing infectious disease research in both the Antarctic and here in the Arctic.
What a great way to launch your career. Now, you're in a good position, I guess, to judge the difference between the last polar year and how this one differs from it. How does it differ?
Well, while this international polar year will focus on climate issues and establish infrastructure for future research, this polar year will be the first time that there will be a focus on human health in Arctic regions. And this is an initiative that we at the CDC's Arctic Investigation Program are leading. The polar year will be an opportunity to increase global awareness on health concerns of Arctic people, perhaps foster more research, promote strategies to protect their health, and just try and generally improve the health and well-being of the residents of the Arctic.
Talk about, please, a little bit of the activities that are planned around health issues during this polar year.
Well, together with other international partners, we're coordinating what has become known as the Arctic Human Health Initiative, and the goal of this is to increase awareness and visibility of health concerns of the Arctic people, particularly by promoting research and strategies that will improve their health. And to date, we have about 40 proposals from 5 of the 8 Arctic countries which have been accepted as International Polar Year human health proposals. And these are clustered within the Arctic Human Health Initiative. Proposals are clustered in 3 sort of general areas: expansion of networks, promotion of research, and, of course, outreach and education. And we at the CDC's Arctic Investigations Program are using the International Polar Year to expand our International Circumpolar Surveillance Network into Arctic regions of the Russian Federation. This is a network of public health laboratories in 7 of the 8 Arctic countries that currently shares standardized surveillance information on invasive bacterial diseases, and now we're doing surveillance on tuberculosis. We're collaborating with international partners on a number of research projects to reduce the burden of diseases caused by invasive bacterial disease, hepatitis B, Helicobacter pylori, and sexually transmitted diseases in indigenous populations of the Arctic.
So it really does provide an opportunity then to focus new attention on issues that have either been longstanding and perhaps not adequately or fully explored, and to open up some new issues as well. Dr. Parkinson, thanks for sharing information on Arctic health and the International Polar Year. and I hope that we'll see some real improvements as a result. Our discussion with Dr. Alan Parkinson is based on his work with CDC's Arctic Investigations Program, and in the January 2008 issue of CDC's journal, Emerging Infectious Diseases, you will find many articles of interest on this topic, Arctic Health and the International Polar Year. To check them out, go to the journal online at CDC's website, www.cdc.gov/EID. Again, that website address, www.cdc.gov/EID. Thank you for joining us.
To access the most accurate and relevant health information that affects you, your family, and your community, please visit www.cdc.gov.